You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Judy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Yes, okay. This is Dr. Judy Wood here, and she has a PhD, and I was just astounded when I went to her webpage. I had seen a little information from a couple of sources, and I thought it's crackpot, and I just didn't spend any more time at it. And then I got another email, and I thought, well, let me go in and spend a few minutes here. And I went in there, and I said, oh, my God, this can't be so. I know they've been lying to us. But anyway, I don't have your page up now, but you have a tremendous not only have a PhD, but in physics and that. So maybe you could give us just a brief description of your background, and then if you would give us an overview of some of the issues that people can point to, and then you can cover those, and we'll sit back and listen, and I'll ask a few questions.
Great. Let's see. I have my bachelor's degree in civil engineering, structural engineering, master's degree in engineering mechanics, which is like applied physics, and a PhD in materials engineering science, which focused on engineering mechanics problems. My area of expertise is interferometry, using interference of optical beams to look at deformation of materials characterization. So very much a forensics engineer. And I'm trained to observe and look at the evidence and see what the evidence tells you. And I strongly believe that if you look at the evidence and listen to it carefully, it will tell you exactly what happened. If you don't know what happened, you need to listen more. And you keep looking at the evidence until it becomes self-evident what happened.
Okay.
I would like to start out with, you know, making a statement for the record. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that our government is responsible for executing the events of 9/11. But I also don't believe our government is not responsible for executing the events of 9/11. This is not a case of belief. This is a crime that should be solved by a forensics study of the evidence. Before we can determine who did it, we must first determine what was done, what happened, and how it was done. And, you know, let's remember what's required to convict someone of a crime in a court of law. You cannot convict someone of a crime based on belief. That's a witch hunt. You cannot convict someone of a crime if you don't even know what crime to charge them with. If you accuse someone of murder using a gun, you better be sure the body has at least a bullet hole in it. And what we, you know, yet, you know, 9/11, before noon, we were told who done it before any investigation was conducted about what was done.
Does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, those people say 9/11 was an inside job. What they're stating is they studied what was done, how it was done, in order to establish who done it. But I don't believe anyone has done the first two steps, including NIST.
I haven't seen it done either. That's what was so shocking, all of the things that I was looking at. I won't take your thunder away. You can bring those up when you want to, but you know, but go ahead.
Oh, no, there's more than 2 hours worth, like weeks and months worth. If anyone has been to my website, the website just grew and grew until it was bursting at the seams, and it's really too large. I've been meaning to put in a new front page that someone made for me, and it's called the new page, but I haven't done that yet because people are probably still used to where to find things. But there is a page that's a very good overview. It's the WTC Cliff Notes page. Or you go to my website, drjudywood.com. That's DRJUDYWOOD, four letters, drjudywood.com/WTC. And that will take you right to it. And there's a whole host of things on that page, like some of everything. But most importantly, there's a list of evidence that needs to be explained. So whatever, you know, conclusion someone wants to come to, it needs to deal with this list of evidence. You know, if you say that somebody shot the body to death, well, it shot somebody to death, but the body doesn't have any bullet holes in it, it doesn't matter if this person owns a gun. You know, if the body, mm-hmm. The person is dead for some other reason. So you need to start out, you know, here's what we can observe, all the different categories of evidence. And there's quite a few. And the most obvious one that no one really seems to deal with, or few deal with, is where did the buildings go?
That was the one that grabbed me first. Where did the buildings go?
It's just an empty field. As a matter of fact, there was 14 people who survived in Stairwell B. They're trapped in there for several hours and then came out. And one of them described coming out onto an empty football field.
Okay, hold that thought, Dr. Wood. We're going into a break, and we'll be back, and we're going to find out where the buildings went. Well, we're back from break here. We got Dr. Wood and talking about 9/11, and where did the buildings go, and how much is missing? Go ahead, Dr. Wood.
Most of it's missing. There's some interesting pictures of, you know, that were taken from West Street, which is on the west side of the complex, like right outside the front door, where the front door was, of Tower 1. Yet Tower 1 isn't there, down to ground level. And that picture was taken before noon on 9/11, or around noon, you can see from the shadows. And you know what day it is because Building 7 is still standing in the background. And you should have Tower 1 blocking the view.
You would think, wouldn't you?
And there's an ambulance that was parked right outside the door. It's still parked there. But there's no building. It doesn't appear very...
Where did the building go?
Damn, it turned to dust. It was like Camelot. You know the scene where I think Guinevere says, oh, I suppose all the leaves fall into neat little piles? And I think Lancelot then says something like, yes, and they blow away at night, of course. That's what happened to the buildings. They just blew away in the breeze. The fuming that we saw for months, I believe that was part of the building. That was the material turning into nano-sized particles and just floating away.
Well, I noticed in the video that when it was coming down that it looked like one of those, that the whole bunch of the iron structures, the steel, was still standing. But then all of a sudden, when it gets all through, they aren't there.
Right. There's a photo looking from north of the tower, looking south, where Tower 1 is going poof. I don't say collapse. I say poof, just as a generic term for some process that we're not familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And you see these, I call them wheat checks, the prefab sections of steel. They're three columns wide and three stories tall. The building was made out of. You see some of these flying through the air, and then right afterwards, there's the picture of the intersection. There's only paper there, paper and dust. No solid pieces. But we just saw in the video that the material, solid material, coming down, but it melts like ice cream on the way down.
This sounds like Star Wars.
Well, I refer to the Star Wars program that, you know, what did they research and develop in that program? And what did other countries research and develop in a similar program?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that whoever studied it in our program knows what, you know, they probably get a scoop behind the scenes of what other countries are capable of. But we don't really know of any new technology since Hiroshima. But obviously, they didn't stop the Research and Development Department, you know, in 1945.
How much rubble is missing?
I don't know exactly, but I think it's safe to say at least 80%. And actually, I did a calculation of the seismic impact. If you remove the top 80% of the building and then the bottom 20% fell in three, you know, like controlled demolition or whatever, fell, it would make the seismic signal that we actually had recorded.
Out of the missing material, is it? Oh, go ahead.
How much missing material? It, you know, that's a scenario where 80% of the material would be missing, and that's what it kind of looks like.
Is a missing material 80%. Composed of cement, the cement stuff, or the iron more than the other, you think, or?
Everything. There isn't a single toilet or part of a toilet at the site. There was probably at least 2,000 toilets in those buildings. And we don't even see one, you know, fragment of a toilet that's recognizable. And that's something you recognize at every junkyard.
Do you think there are any people that were missing out of this, too, totally?
Any people missing?
Yes, when this happened.
Yeah, there's, you know, of course, DNA that was identified. And the DNA that was identified, you know, roughly 1,500 or 1,600 bodies. It could be counted for by the number of jumpers, as well as the, you know, number of firefighters. No more. So what about all the people who were left in the building?
Where did they go?
To dust.
Did they find the jet engines that are indestructible? Did they find those?
Not to my knowledge. There's been no positive identification made on any plane parts or, you know, black boxes or anything else that we would expect. But here we have two 110-story buildings. We have a 22-story building. We have an 8-story building. We have a 47-story building. And also another 9-story building where the majority of the building goes AWOL.
Wow. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a minute. Break here, and I got Dr. Wood on talking about 9/11, and got a caller here that has a question about any NASA connections to the events, satellite activity, and the molecular disintegration that obviously happened. And I watched one of the videos, and it looked to me like in one of those pictures, I was seeing a vertical I-beam just taken off and disintegrating into dust right before my eyes.
Right. It's referred to as the spire. It's a cluster of core columns that's left hanging from Tower 1. And from the pictures, you know that Building 7 is 47 stories, and this tower is well above Building 7. So I'm guessing it's like 70 stories tall. It's around 800 feet tall. In order for columns 800 feet tall to be freestanding, we know they're strong and rigid. And then if they fell over, because they're unsupported, if they fell over, they'd take out a few city blocks. They'd slice some buildings to death. So they'd do some big damage. But it didn't fall over and hit some other building. There's no matter what it even appears as, there's no other explanation other than what we apparently see, is it turning to dust. And that needs to be explained. Incidentally, those core columns appear to be right above that zone where those 14 people survived in the stairwell B, which was in the center of the building, which I thought was kind of interesting. The other question about a NASA connection. I'm not looking at whodunit at all. I'm looking at what happened. And so, it doesn't matter what NASA did or didn't do at this point. But there are some satellite images that are pretty interesting. There's one that was taken a week or so after the event, looking straight down, and you can see cylindrical holes cut out of the adjacent buildings. But like a big post hole digger removed sections of buildings. Approximately 50% of the mass of Building 6 has been removed. It's just an empty hole inside. Mighty bizarre.
Yes, and we've heard conflicting things about the molten metal and all that, and I was looking and from NASA up above, what's your take on that as far as the temperature?
I look at physical evidence, the most direct evidence, and there's no indication of molten metal. Matter of fact, to the contrary. For example, why didn't the paper burn? We have all sorts of unburned paper. Also, with this, big dust cloud chasing people down the street, we've seen those pictures.
Yes.
When the cloud overtook the people and passed them by, you ended up with people covered in dust and coughing on the dust. You didn't have a pile of burned bodies. And some of the eyewitnesses have described the temperature of the dust cloud initially being cooler than ambient temperature. Also, on the afternoon of, around noon or just after noon on 9/11, a water main broke in West Street, and it turned into a lake. And the lake covered all the way up to Building 3, or the remnants of Building 3. And there's pictures of firefighters walking around, wading out, and they're knee-deep, thigh-deep. They don't look like boiled chicken. If this was molten metal underneath, can you store molten metal in your swimming pool? Chernobyl exploded because of water hitting something very hot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got another. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I have a couple other questions here, and then we'll zero in. The two other things that all of these cars, all of these odd things that happen to the cars, different vehicles and things, and the first question that popped into my mind is how close were all of these cars that to the proximity of what the where the action was, and then all of these unexplained things that happens. Part of a car is there and part of a car isn't, or maybe an engine's missing. But the first one is how far away were cars affected in the picture that you have on your page?
There's a parking lot that's about a quarter mile away. And then there's over on the east side of Manhattan, right on the East River, right on the road right underneath FDR Drive, there's a bunch of them there. And that's about a half mile away or a little bit more. There's a cluster of them there. And eyewitnesses there, saw the cars exhibit spontaneous combustion. And people try to fit things into their known framework. So they were assuming that there had to be a fireball that rolled down the street from the World Trade Center and caught the cars on fire. Because why else would these cars suddenly catch on fire? But the pattern on those cars, doesn't matter where they're parked, the pattern on it is really bizarre, and that is what told me it had to be a type of energy field. There's this toasted car, I call it toasted, it's history, it can't be fixed. It's like something's toast, it's history, it's gone. It's not necessarily fire caused it. but it looks like it. But I just, that's why I use this generic term toasted. So it's got this, it's toasted on the side of this passenger door, but there's this circular spot with a new wax job in the middle of that. And, you know, normal fires don't abruptly stop at 1 nanometer over, no trace of fire at all. You have black, white, and shades of gray. There's a gradient. But in this car, there was no gradient. And on the other side of it, it's completely toasted up to the front door, and then abruptly, the back door on backwards from there, it's got a new wax job, pristine condition. That's not a normal fire. The inside of that car, the hump that goes over the drive shaft, has these little pinholes in the steel, something like 8 out the steel. Well, you know, the back of the car is in pristine condition. It's just absolutely bizarre. And the door kind of, on the police car in front of that one, is sags. There's just some really weird things. There's some cars in a parking lot about a quarter mile away that there's a row of them, and there's one, you know, there's car one, and then 2, 3, and 4 are different than car five. So car one and car five look like they're the same make. Not same model, but same make. And there's just no engine in them. It's just gone. But cars in between don't have their engine missing. You know, bizarre things like that.
Well, this could have nothing to do with the normal constraints of what we think happened at 9/11. Absolutely. Especially that they're distance away.
This is not seen as anything else either. And the West Broadway, I call it the swamp because it was, you know, flooded with water to put out, presumably to put out the car fires, sometime in the middle of the day, because there's pictures where Building 7 is still standing, that every car down that street on both sides was toasted. But no trees were toasted. No paper was toasted. There's photos where paper is not burning right next to a car that appears to be, you know, in flames. There's a particular picture that is really bizarre. That folks say, oh, well, it must have been the debris that fell on the car to catch it on fire. Well, does the debris come with a locksmith? Because it's burning on the inside of the car, not the outside. Yeah, explain that one.
It is impossible.
The other thing with that particular picture is that it looks like it's taken at midnight, but we know it was taken during the time one of the towers went poof. So what does that tell you? It was pitch black. That takes 100% blockage of the sun. Eyewitnesses said they couldn't see their hand in front of them. They didn't know if they're indoors or outdoors. Imagine what it takes to block out the sunlight.
Wow.
Fine particles, enough fine particles to completely block the sun. That's pretty amazing.
Now,
in regular controlled demolitions, the dust doesn't go any higher than, you know, really much higher than the top of the initial standing structure.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go up. It goes down.
Mm-hmm. How long does the dust last at 9/11 there?
Well, the official line is 99 days. And, you know, the cover story was that it's fires for 99 days, but there's no evidence of that. There's things that look like fire, but it's not quite. It's like this toasted car that is in pristine condition adjacent to a place that looks totally toasted. We see, you know, something that's glowing, that appears to be glowing hot, but it cannot be hot because it's sitting on paper. It's not burning. If you had, you know, a piece of iron that was glowing white hot, it has to be over 1,200 degrees centigrade. Paper is going to be burnt up by then.
Absolutely.
Now, paper combusts at a pretty low temperature, but I think everyone will admit there's, sea of paper all over the place.
And it's not burning.
Correct. There's another interesting myth of, the steel-toed boots melting. And I think this is a case of, people need answers. So many weird things going on. They need answers. As soon as they're given an answer, they quit asking questions. And they don't think about the answer, if it makes sense, because they got so many decisions that are going on in their life at that moment, they don't think about it. So, apparently the steel-toed boots were disintegrating, and they were told that they were melting. But think about it. There are no reports of burned feet or cooked feet inside those boots. How could you have steel-toed boots melting? If your oven was melting, don't you think the chicken inside would be, burnt up?
More than so.
So you stop and think of, the evidence. It doesn't make sense. But so many people are just, needed an answer and just ran with it.
So we got a building that's missing maybe 80% of the rubble. We have
at least
cars. 80%. Pardon?
At least 80%.
And we have cars that aren't even in close proximity that are, as you say, toasted or all sorts of weird things happening that aren't even close to the building. We got people's boots, these steel-toed boots that are melting. How about
they're told they're melting.
And then one of the two other things that really caught my attention is the speed of gravity and then about a hurricane. I couldn't believe there was a hurricane sitting there.
But there's building four, nobody gives it any attention. Poor building four gets neglected. The main body of building four went missing. It's not there, down to the ground. You can sweep it up with a broom, probably. There's a few weed checks on top of it, but that's supposedly where the top of Tower 2, when we saw it start to tip, it would have landed on Building 4, but it never landed. It turned to dust in midair. So nothing landed on Building 4, but Building 4 disappeared.
How big was Building 4?
It was a 9-story building.
Mm-hmm.
And the main body of it just totally disappeared, and it looked cut off with an X-Acto knife, where the north wing is still there. And you could look in and see what's on somebody's desk, where that sliced open spot.
Wow.
Fires don't do that. Collapses don't do that.
No.
Another weird thing is that building looked like it was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's glowing, but there's these flags, row of flags right outside the windows that never caught on fire.
Wow. I listened to Jesse Ventura. I watched his little short video there. He's got about a 3-minute video, and he was a SEAL and trained in the demolitions, and this never happened. Absolutely never happened, like they're trying to tell us.
Right. And at least some people are out there thinking and saying, this doesn't add up. Another weird thing is the round holes and windows of adjacent buildings. Round holes or circular-ish, like oval. I don't think you could get a glass cutter to make such a nice hole, especially when it's a double-pane window and only the outer pane has the round hole in it. And the inner pane is still intact.
You're kidding.
Explain that one.
Wow. I better get some, maybe I should get some gin or something here, because this is really getting way out there. See, that's when I seen a few of these things come through, and then I went and checked out your site, and I said, my golly gee whiz, I watched a couple of these Dying Long Bun tapes, and none of this stuff is addressed. Zero, zip, nada.
Yeah, I think they mainly focus on the whodunit, or the, who's, he said, she said, who said, what said, that's what I call it. But it distracts away from looking at what happened. And you first have to start with, was the body shot to death or poisoned to death? In a regular murder investigation, you look at what happened first before you charge somebody with a crime.
Absolutely.
What happened? It's just bizarre.
The other thing that just caught my attention, there was a level 3 hurricane sitting off of New York on 911, and I'd never heard of that before.
Isn't that interesting? It wasn't on the morning news. They showed. I have a couple of weather maps from that morning. You know, I don't know if it was Al Roker or whoever it is showing the CBS and an NBC one network station, and they show the continent. They show that patch of the ocean where it should be, but there's no hurricane there. And someone might, you know, say, well, you know, it wasn't going to come ashore, so why should they alert anybody? How could they be so sure that it wasn't going to come ashore?
Yeah, that somebody's controlling it. Hold that thought. We'll be back here. Just, oh, God, I tell you. Unbelievable. Well, we're back for break and have Dr. Wood, and I've got two immediate questions. If we had a hurricane, number one, a level 3, is that not high enough, number one, to cause problems? I had it came to shore. And number two is how far off the coast of New York was that hurricane or the center of it?
Well, it's not about is it going to come ashore. If it just sits, you know, parks outside of New York and sits there for too long, there are going to be storm surges that cause flooding. JFK Airport is at sea level. It's right there, you know, on the southern side of Long Island. We have, you know, Manhattan that is at sea level with very limited ways of evacuating. So it, just in case it comes ashore, you want to give people a head start, those who are, you know, extra worried and want to make sure that they, you know, make a run for it just in case. You know, because otherwise, if it is going to flood out things, how long do people have to evacuate? Yeah, how long did it take to evacuate New Orleans? A couple of days, at least. Nonstop. So in some place like New York with limited exits for traffic, you know, during rush hour, you need to warn the people, you know, like I know someone who recently when Hurricane Bill was headed up there and it looked like it was following the same path, they rented a car just to make sure they had access to leave just in case. But people on 9/11 or before 9/11 weren't given that warning. And it doesn't matter if they know for sure if it's going to come ashore or not. The fact that it's just in the neighborhood, there's going to be high seas and flooding.
Well, level three is high enough up the level, number one, that you would pay attention to that level of a hurricane, right?
Yes. It was level 3 actually the night before. The day before that, it went from a tropical storm to a Category 3 in one day. And it pulled right up like it was pulling up to a chalk line and stopped, and then it spread out. You know how a figure skater spreads their arms out and slows down?
Mm-hmm.
So it slowed down, but it covered a much wider area. So if you look at the, you know, force under the curve, you have just as much strength. But what was significant is it's not necessarily where the cloud cover is, but outside of the cloud cover. Is an interesting issue. There are people with arthritis who say that they sense when a storm is coming. They can feel it. There's some electrical change in the air, in the environment. They can sense something. Also, before, you know, in the front of the storm, in front of that, you get dry thunder. There's some electrical activity that's causing that.
Mm-hmm.
On 9/11, there was thunder reported at JFK Airport, at LaGuardia Airport, and at Newark Airport. Those are all surrounding Manhattan. So we have evidence of field effects from the hurricane.
Okay.
It was some sort of environmental change going on at that time,
mm-hmm.
which is... pretty peculiar. That's a piece of evidence. That's you know, a matter of fact. We don't know for sure what it was doing, but we know that, indeed there were effects there. And for some reason, we weren't being told about this.
Do you think there's any correlation between the 911, what happened to the buildings, and the hurricane?
Well, before I discovered the hurricane, I had categorized all these different types of evidence. I didn't know what caused it, but I knew it was some sort of interference because of these patterns. And it was not a regular thermal heat. Sounds like we need a break.
We do. We're going to go on break again. Okay. We'll be back here. We're going to the top of the hour, and stay tuned, and then we're going to get to Hutchinson Effect and Tesla. Okay, well, we're going to cut into the, I usually let that music play, but I got Dr. Wood on, and we have so much information I'd like to, and questions. Dr. Wood, about 911 and talking about the hurricane and what possible reason it may have been there and why weren't we told about it. Go ahead.
Well, those are just pieces of information. And as I say, you keep looking at the evidence until it tells you what happened. My background, as I said, is in interferometry. And when I saw that patch on the car that wasn't cooked and the part next to it, you know, looked toasted, you know, nice new wax job and a nanometer over, completely toasted. That reminds me of, you know, like a contact print with a photograph where it's with a photograph. Let's think of how that works. It isn't just the light that's making a photographic print. The light is activating the chemicals that are in the photographic emulsion. So it's an interference, an interaction between the two. The photographic emulsion is uniform. The photographic negative, or image that you put on your photographic film, the light is allowed to go through in some places and not others, and that controls the exposure. So you have a uniform field, and then you have something that activates it in different amounts. Well, let's think about a uniform field of energy, and then you have something that interferes with it in specific places by a specific amount. But it's not quite fully controlled. There's a few oopses and leaks here and there. And why I go to the issue of energy is because how do you have something burning next to paper that's not burning? How do you have steel turning to dust and glowing as it turns to dust, while paper does not burn? We don't see stacks of burned bodies. We see, you know, body parts, but they're not burned. There's a burnt aspect of them, but that's trying to fit it into our known framework of how we see things. Also, these round holes in the windows, the circular holes through the outer pane, but not the inner pane. That the only thing I would know that would cause that is a longitudinal wave of energy. You know, think of dropping a pebble into a still pond of water. It ripples outward. But let's say it ripples outward faster than the water can handle. It's going to have sort of a standing wave kind of a boundary to it. I think that might be kind of how it works. But then I keep looking at more and more things. There's all this nonsense about molten metal. And, you know, if water is put on molten metal, you have a steam explosion. We didn't have a steam explosion on 9/11. When water goes from, liquid to gas, because it turns into steam, it expands in volume by 1,600 times. That's 1,600 times. That's a huge amount. So it's like every molecule suddenly needs more room. I was thinking about that. It was on my mind. I was looking at a picture of the tipping top of Tower 2, where it looks like suddenly around the hinge point, the building just turns into kind of like a steam form of building. You know, like solid turns into this, you know, erupts into this like a gas, but not really a gas. And just look at it as analogous.
Mm-hmm.
As though every molecule had to repel its neighbor.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back in a minute here. This is amazing. Okay, we're back from break here, Dr. Wood, and you were telling us about the buildings up there. It looks like it was steam or dust or something. Go ahead.
Yeah, the solid building suddenly, you know, looks like it. The molecules that are attracted to each other to make a solid material suddenly look like they were repelling each other, kind of like water turning into steam. And I thought, wow, that's pretty weird. And it seemed like a pretty consistent theme. And so I started looking into what kinds of things do that, and that's where I found the Casimir force about that. And I also found an article about how it can get the direction can get reversed to the point it causes levitation. And it can also cause propulsion. You know, it's on a continuum of different explanations. And then I got to thinking about these wheat checks coming down that appeared to be coming down faster than gravity, like they were being propelled down, like they're, you know, had rocket motors shooting out of the back. And you see this material just shooting out. Well, yeah, if it's turning into dust and the material is repelling itself, it's going to get the solid part that hasn't come apart yet and propel it down faster. Now, I don't say the building collapsed faster than free fall speed. I say it was destroyed faster. It went away faster from the beginning to the end of when the building went away visually. And also from the seismic signal, the North Tower shook the ground for only 8 seconds when it went away, or 8.4 seconds. And it takes 9.5 seconds in a vacuum to drop something from the roof to the pavement. So, yeah, Houston, we have a problem.
Absolutely.
So the buildings went away. They were destroyed faster than physics can explain with free fall.
And that's both of the buildings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, here's another really quick hands-on type of exercise. If the buildings came boom, 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 pancaking down on each other in 8 seconds, let's get it 10 seconds or 12 seconds. There's 110 stories that go away in, you know, let's say 10 seconds. Or so, or 12. How many times can you clap your hands in 10 or 12 seconds?
Not very many.
That's like 10 claps a second. Now think about how fast this building went away. We're not talking about a little bit of difference. We're talking about a lot different than what's physically possible with ordinary physics.
Mm-hmm.
But if the building turned into dust and did not slam to the ground, which is, if you look at the evidence, that's what the evidence shows, then, of course, the ground only shook for 8 seconds. And Building 7 was even more dramatic. It was like the impact of a jackhammer. A jackhammer. Can you imagine that? You have 47 stories where each floor is the size of a football field. If those came crashing down, it would be like raining dump trucks, wouldn't it?
How long did Building 7 take to hit the ground?
It's arguable, you know, different, 6.5 seconds, 18 seconds, depending on who you talk to. But the seismic energy associated with it was barely or not even barely detectable above background noise.
Mm-hmm.
That needs an explanation.
So where do you think this, in your educated guess of the evidence, points to now? I know you had mentioned on your homepage the Hutchison effect.
Right. When I started looking at the chasm force, suddenly all of these chunks of evidence, by golly, there's a reproduction of each one of these phenomena that he had done on a small scale. So it had to me, it said it had to involve the same type of physics. It was reproducible on this scale, on a small scale. Now, for the same field effect that the hurricane could have provided, John Hutchison first used a Tesla coil, then he used the Van de Graaff generator. It creates a field, an energy field, and within that, he interferes another kind of energy that interferes with that field. So that could provide the direction or, you know, the exposure, using my photographic analogy, of the uniform field, you know, to control it within that. And we do know it was directed because we have these cylindrical cutouts. Very, you know, clean.
So what you're saying is that the hurricane played some part in this 911, then, you think?
It could have. It appears that way. Looking into hurricanes more, you remember hearing about how straw goes through trees if it's flying fast enough?
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of a myth, but there's something that does happen with hurricanes that is very similar to the Hutchison effect. We get levitation. Well, that's something I didn't mention. Around the World Trade Center, we also have upside-down cars. And the cars that are upside down are not toasted. They're just upside down. There's a picture where there's a car parked that's toasted. The car parked in front of it isn't toasted, but it's upside down in a parking spot.
What briefly would you say is the Hutchison effect?
It's a whole host of phenomena that, you know, like levitation. There's disintegration of materials. It's a wide variety, long list of things. There's a link to John Hutchison's website, a new website from mine. It's thehutchisoneffect.com. No, thehutchisoneffect.com. And that gives some pretty good explanations of all the different phenomena. And there's Hutchison series compared with the World Trade Center that I have on my site as well, where you have pictures from the World Trade Center and pictures of John Hutchison samples. And you can see the correlation. Like, we've seen this horseshoe-shaped beam or curled-up beams at the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. John Hutchison has these big, solid, you know, massive copper, molybdenum, aluminum, steel bars that curl and bend and do weird things. And there's videos of it, too, where, you know, it looks like it's doing sit-ups. There's a steel bar that's doing sit-ups, and then it, you know, flies someplace.
Mm-hmm. I got a couple callers here. I'll take a couple quick calls here. Keith, go ahead. You're online. Go ahead. You got a question?
Yes. Hello, Ralph and Judy. And I just
wanted
to say thanks to you, Judy, for putting all the anomalies on your website and also for getting us all confused now. But there's two things I wanted to talk about. I know your expertise not in weaponry, but how does directed energy relate to scalar, particle beams, space-based weapons? I mean, have you? Go ahead.
I'll just look at the evidence and see what the evidence tells me. I didn't know anything about directed energy weapons when I began, but what the evidence told me is that that's what it had to be, that it had to exist because that's, you know, what the material tells me what happened to it. And why I call it directed energy weapons, because what else do I call it? It's energy that was directed and used as a weapon.
Well, it seems to me, obviously, there's at least two different weapon systems. There's explosions before all this molecular dissolution of metal and concrete and not paper. So it seems like they have technology where they can, kind of like an analogy to neutron bombs. They can do this destruction to, you know, human life and not touch buildings. I mean, they can pick and choose what they want to dissolve at the molecular level. Would you say that?
What disintegrates. I think the building was disintegrating the whole hour or hour and a half, you know, for each building, because you see the building shedding and parts coming down. There's things otherwise you can't explain without saying the building was dissolving. Just like Building 7, it was dissolving all afternoon. All that stuff that looked like smoke coming out, that was building mass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the different types of clouds and the color of them and the way that... But,
right.
You know, the other thing, too, I wanted to ask Ralph, I mentioned last week, did you get a chance to watch Missing Links, a video? Ralph?
Me?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Okay, see, now it's kind of important because, I mean, just starting at the basic level, for us people who are not scientists or anything else, but they're showing slow motion of the videos that we were shown of planes allegedly hitting the towers. But, I mean, this is beyond anything that's possible the way they show it. I mean, the penetration into the buildings, you know. Planes are aluminum. I don't care if they weigh a lot and they're going 450 miles an hour. They're going to crumple like a tin can when a fat man steps on it on a concrete sidewalk.
Can I interrupt you here? Do you want to have any comment on that? Because I got a bunch of other callers backed up here, too.
We could talk about it, the airplanes, all day and night and so forth. They don't describe what happened to the building, so there's sort of a non-issue. But what the explanation that airplanes went through the wall like a, you know, better than a Greg Louganis dive, a splashless dive, it needs some explanation, as well as why it could go in at an angle and not, you know, flip around. The physics of it don't work.
Okay. Okay, well, I hear the music calling, and thanks for calling, Keith. We've got a couple other callers. Okay, we're back for break here, talking 911. Dr. Judy Wood, a physicist, and we have Sheldon. You're next in line. Go ahead.
Hello, Ralph.
Yeah, hello there.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to admit it, but I'm one of Dr. Wood's biggest supporters. I, too, was an Alex Jones fanatic about bombs in the building until talk show host Dion Burley brought to my attention in August of last year about Dr. Wood's research, and I think she's definitely an expert in this field. And for anybody that, you know, wants to go along with bombs in the building, how about firefighter testimony of Scott packs exploding? Do you know what those are? Yeah, so what did they do, put thermite in the fireman's oxygen bottle? So that's a good one to throw out there for those doubting Thomases about directed energy weapons.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a question for Dr. Wood, for the listeners?
The hurricane was definitely parked off the East Coast. According to Professor Jim McCanny and former meteorologist Scott Stevens, they have figured out how to weaponized hurricane, so the hurricane aspect of the weaponry definitely makes sense in all this, so I just wanted to throw that in.
Okay, do you have any comment, Dr. Wood? Thanks, Sheldon.
Yeah, I'm glad he brought up the Scott Pack issue. I think the previous caller was talking about explosions beforehand, or maybe he was talking about something else. Often folks say, well, we heard explosions. Well, when you put a raw egg in your microwave oven, you hear an explosion. It doesn't mean that TNT is in your egg, you know, a cooking egg, like a chicken egg. Things explode for various reasons. You put a soda can in your freezer, it's going to explode when it freezes. If you have a pressurized container and you're dissolving the metal, it gets thin enough to the point and loses its integrity enough so that the pressure inside explodes out. The building is full of air pressure tanks, water tanks. Think of I call them turbo toilets. You know, the air pressure that's used to minimize the amount of water that's required to flush a toilet. So, you know, think of how many toilets you have on every single floor of the building. You have air pressure tanks every so many floors. You have the water that's needed for that, the holding tanks for the water. If that water container breaks, what happens? You know, you get it shooting out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the interesting thing is these extra oxygen bottles on the fire trucks at ground level, parked outside of the towers, were exploding in the trucks. And that needs to be explained.
Wow.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead and say, I was just talking to the caller. Go ahead and finish your thought.
There's an eyewitness who was running along VC Street when Tower 2 was going poof, and that's, you know, a couple blocks away, and describing as she ran past cars, they're exploding, just blowing up for no reason. And there's some others that were describing further up from there. The cars were just going into spontaneous combustion or exploding. Just as they walked past them, it was, you know, pretty creepy.
So there's absolutely no way that this could have happened in this these BS stories with explosives, or because it's physically impossible to collapse or be destroyed, I guess, in the time frame that they gave us. It's not impossible. And then how do all these cars that aren't even there, how can you explain that?
You don't even have pockmarks on the adjacent buildings. They should look sandblasted if there were bombs in the building.
So we're being fed a whole bunch of cover lies. It makes great video, and they put a story with it, and we're supposed to buy the sound bite, and we're done.
Right. It's to herd those asking questions off into a different direction.
A mm-hmm. Guy in Arizona or Arkansas. Guy, you there? Got a question for Dr. Wood?
Yes, Ralph. I'm here, and I'm in Arkansas. And does your guest have a website real quick?
DrJudyWood.com. Thank you for asking. Yeah, DrJudyWood.com.
Okay, thank you so much. Dr. Wood, what you're describing with the engines and the hole in the glass and the other peculiarities that you've discovered, do you have any of those pictures on your website? I haven't been there, so that's why I'm asking.
Oh, an abundance of more than enough. You'll be there for days.
Okay,
but for good once over, go to the WTC Cliff Notes page or after drjudywood.com/WTC. And it takes a little while to load, but it's some of everything on there.
Oh, thank you so much for that. You know, the last time I talked with you, you were on the Sophia Network on RBN so many months ago. And I had you were explaining at that time that there was an energy that was missing to explain the rapid descent of the building.
That was somebody impersonating me. That was not me.
Oh.
That was not me. I was never on that show.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Well, I stand corrected.
No, yeah, it was done for that purpose, I believe. Andrew Johnson wrote an article about that. If you go to my website, you'll see links to his site and also a book that he has presented, and it's in there. A free book to download.
Ralph, I've got something else to say here.
Okay, well, hold on through the break. We'll be right back. Break here, and Guy, you had another question here. I got a couple other callers. You had another question or comment?
I'll make it quick, Ralph. I respect your time. Thank you. Dr. Woods, I did not mean that someone was impersonating you. I just must have made a mistake there. But what if you are interested in the speed of the collapse of the buildings, I have heard that that C4 was implanted in those buildings, and the peculiar and one of the properties of C4 is that it creates gravity waves. So this would be an answer to the quick fall of the buildings if a certain amount of C4 was planted in those buildings to create the gravity waves to bring these buildings down quicker. Thank you, Ralph, and I'll let the callers jump on. Thank you.
You have a comment, Dr. Wood?
Yeah. C4 might do something, but it is inconsistent with what we saw happen. C4 is an explosive, a kinetic energy weapon that launches material outward. Material was not launched very far outward from this building. For example, the postal building does not have pockmarks on it. The facade of it wasn't damaged at all. WFC 1, 2, and 3 have holes in their windows, and then marble is missing around the doorway, but except for that one corner, there's no damage to the facade in terms of, like, no stab wounds, doesn't look sandblasted. And so you can go all the way around the complex. And that's what you would get if you had an explosive.
So the bottom line is it wasn't explosives.
Right. And you also would have temperature associated with explosives.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't temperature associated with this.
Okay. Mike in Kentucky, do you have a question or a comment? We've got a couple other callers here. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, directed energy weapons, of course, seems plausible to me. I mean, what's a microwave? It's specifically tuned to vibrate water molecules, and water molecules will vibrate with certain frequencies. They have certain harmonic frequencies that you can vibrate water molecules, and they get all excited and heat up, and that's how you get a lot of your food cooked in a microwave. So
exactly.
It's not some science fiction concept. I mean, I think a lot of people are out of touch with what technologies have been developed since World War II. And a lot of times the public doesn't find out about them for 20 years after the government's already had the stuff implemented. But are you contending that the pictures that show construction type equipment lifting up chunks of glowing hot metal, and these accounts from the workers there that had, accidentally stepping on places where they would melt their boots and things, these really hot temperatures in the debris pile, and even NASA's thermal imaging, you're saying that stuff was faked or what?
The interpretation.
There's a lot of pictures of really molten-looking metal out there.
Let's think about it. If you were wading through molten metal with your boots, does that make sense?
Nobody's wading through. That's an exaggeration. Nobody's wading through molten metal, but there are pictures that, I guess they could be faked in this digital age of a lot of really glowing hot metal.
Let Dr. Wood answer the question you've stated.
Okay.
What's your comment, Dr. Wood?
Thanks. For example, the picture of the grappler that's picking up the glowing piece of material. If that material is glowing because it's hot, then the hydraulics on that grappler would not be working.
No, not the whole thing that it's picking up is not glowing hot. It's the part that it has a hold of is an upper portion that's cooled, and when it picked it up, it pulled pieces of it from below that are still hot. The picture
I see is it's glowing being held by jaws that aren't glowing. There's an abrupt interface between the two. And if this had been something that was glowing because it's hot, that means it's over 1,200 degrees centigrade. In order for this grappler to dig down to, pull that out, it's going to be hot sticking in the ground. It's going to be hot for quite a while. And then another question I have is, where is it taking it? Why did it pick it up? To take it to the dumpster? If it sees something glowing, why is it grabbing it and picking it up? Well, you don't have a hydraulic equipment reaching into a molten metal furnace at a foundry. It's insane. But 82 degrees centigrade is the maximum temperature before you permanently harm or destroy your hydraulic equipment. And the control arms for that jaw are connected directly to, you know, just a few inches from where that grappler is holding the thing. So that's pretty good evidence that that item is not hot. There's also pictures of this glowing stuff sitting on paper that is not burning. Go ahead.
I'm sure you've read or maybe design flaw that was in the towers where the aluminum facade was bolted directly to the outer structural steel that was supposed to be a tube within a tube design. And because of, metallurgists will tell you that, and I've run into that in my own personal life, but you cannot put aluminum directly in contact with steel. It creates an electrical oxidation.
Yeah. I'm looking at the physical evidence of what happened.
Right.
And seeing what happened.
From what I understand, and there's interviews with the people who were involved in the demolition plan, who one day were, they had
That's hearsay of he said, she said, who said, what said.
This is the guy who came to work one day, and the next day the offices were cleaned out.
Let's let Dr. Wood go ahead and answer this question, because I got a couple other callers, too.
I wasn't in that office, and so it's word of mouth about what, who did what wherever. I'm looking at physical evidence about what happened physically. And we were talking about this, the control arm and so forth. It can only function up to 82 degrees before it's permanently damaged. And so that right there rules out that was glowing because it was hot. Now, it turns out that one of the effects of this type of physics that's involved in the Hutchinson effect is luminescence without heat. Melting of metals without heat. So the temperature drops a tad, where metals seem to melt, but they're not hot. And that, to me, seems to agree with the evidence a whole lot more of why you would have this glowing, white, hot-looking thing sitting on paper that doesn't burn.
Okay. Let's go into the next caller here.
Okay.
We got, let's see, Dr. Carly, I guess you're on hold here.
Oh, great. Yeah, hi, Dr. Wood, and hi, Ralph. I'm so glad you're having Dr. Wood on. Ralph, I've had her on my show on RBN, What's Ailing America, that's on Saturdays. It's in the archives a few months ago. And besides the biological weapons, they're getting ready to spring on us with vaccines. Obviously, this is a very important thing that people have to realize. And I'm very excited because I had contacted Dr. Wood to tell her. And the DVD is now available, folks, so please listen up. The History Channel has a new show now on every Tuesday called That's Impossible. So go to history.com/store. Type in the name of the show, That's Impossible, and it will come up with a whole bunch of documentaries they've done. And two of these documentaries back up Dr. Wood. The first one is That's Impossible Weather Warfare. So you're going to learn on that how they're creating hurricanes and things like that. And the other one that's very important as far as Dr. Wood's material is called Death's Impossible Death Rays and Energy-Directed Weapons. And so I encourage you to try to get those, Dr. Wood, as well, because they're basically showing – I'm going to read what they write here. They're bringing to the front the technology to the battlefield. They're going to explore reports of high-powered lasers that can shoot down enemy planes and vaporize armies from space. Bombs that release bursts of energy more powerful than nuclear warheads. Okay? So they're now putting that right on television so that we can see what they're up to.
Okay, great. Do you have any sort of comment, Dr. Wood, before we go to the next caller?
Yes. And the good point is, what I'm saying, I'm just presenting evidence, but there are certain folks that don't want that to be heard, and the momentum has been picked up with the distortion of it. that's calling it space beams or ray beams from space. I have never said where this is located or what type of energy source it was. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a laser beam from space, yet that's how it gets repeated to make it sound silly.
Well, I'm just saying that they have this show which has documentation.
Oh, and they're probably trying to do it.
Yes. So I just wanted the listeners to know that if they find this far-fetched, you can check out those DVDs and see it for yourself.
Okay.
Oh, yes, thanks.
You're very welcome. Great show. Bye-bye.
Before we get to the next caller, because I want to have enough time. We've got another caller here sitting. What do you attribute this to? Is this tied into the Tesla's technology, the Hutchinson effect? Or?
Exactly. Exactly. John Hutchinson didn't do something new. He just put it together and demonstrated it. He was trying to replicate what Nikola Tesla had done. Mm-hmm. And who knows who had done it before then. And actually, John Hutchinson replicated the Ark of the Covenant flames, and that's also on his website, a video showing that. But, it's 100 years ago, Tesla had brought out this technology, but he wanted to give free energy to the world but thought that it would be used for bad as well as good and didn't want that. And so, as the story goes, it was kept out of existence. But if it's being used for bad, then there's no risk. We might as well benefit from using it for good as well.
So the bottom line is, if I get this right, this basically is a Tesla's type of material that Dr. Hutchinson, which could explain all of these anomalies, and this is electromagnetic type of situation that we're witnessing?
It's interference of different types of energy and different fields of energy, like microwaves within an electrostatic field, or, you know, that's one form.
Mm-hmm.
And as for, you know, microwaves not working or direct energy not working, well, we know that microwaves work, and you don't see it work, and it doesn't burn paper.
Mm-hmm.
It cooks the food, but it doesn't burn the paper.
Yep.
Imagine that.
Okay, Fred, California, you got a question here before we go to break for Dr.
Yeah, I do quickly. The Purdue University website shows their several years creation time for a animation of a plane cutting into the building. And they say in the text of that website that the engine shafts of the four engines on the two planes went through the buildings like bullets. And my question has been, since I read that, is where the heck did they go? Are they stuck in a building somewhere in downtown New York? Were they picked up by some guys down in the South Bronx somewhere and taken down to their clubhouse? And Purdue University claimed that these titanium, I think they said, engine shafts were virtually indestructible, and that's why they went through like bullets. I find looking up the jet engines that were used on those planes supposedly were built by Rolls-Royce and had two or three shafts.
Let me interrupt here. Doctor, what do you want to comment on that? I got another caller, too, and then I want to give you time before.
Jet airplanes don't cause round holes in windows. They don't turn material into powder. Yeah. And cause cars down FDR Drive to become mysteriously toasted. They don't also cause cars around the area to flip upside down, on and on and on. So the planes are irrelevant. You know, whether they were or weren't planes is sort of irrelevant to this argument. It's another issue, and there's no evidence for crashed planes. That has been positively identified. But even if it doesn't matter if there was or wasn't, airplanes do not cause buildings to turn into powder in midair.
So the bottom line is it's a nice cover story to redirect our attention from what's really going on. And look, the airplanes hit and hoo-ha.
Yeah, we started talking about airplanes or building designs, and we quit talking about the evidence. The evidence tells the story. Like, one particular thing I didn't talk about was the dust that lands fairly quickly. And then the upwind of the Trade Center, you see a clear blue sky in the background. And pretty soon you notice this fuzz of coming up from the ground. The dust continued to break down after it landed. Coarse dust landed, settled out of the air quickly, continued to break down, and started rising up like streets were fuming.
Wow.
So, airplanes don't do that.
No. Alberto. Oh, yeah, Art and Alberto, you have a call, please. Go ahead.
Hello.
You have a question. We haven't got much time here before break.
Yes, for the doctor that says that the hydraulic equipment is going to fail at 82 degrees, I disagree with that. I mean, water boils at 100, so hydraulic equipment and steel isn't going to fail at 82 degrees.
It permanent damage occurs there. That's, from textbooks on hydraulic equipment. Look up Brandon Casey on the Internet. There's a whole host of information about that.
From my personal experience, water boils at 100 degrees centigrade, and 82 degrees isn't going to all of a sudden just cause
okay.
to fail.
Okay. Brandon Casey is a hydraulics expert, but here's something that I think anyone who's serviced their car probably understands is when your car overheats, it destroys the engine, and the water's boiling by then. So, it pressurizes, and you have to worry about pulling the cap off the radiator because it's going to, be shooting out with lots of pressure. And if your car overheats, parts are destroyed because it doesn't lubricate properly.
Well, I saw another picture on there where all of these people are supposedly looking at all this glowing molten metal. How does that happen?
I'm not sure which picture you're talking about. If it's glowing, it can, it could glow because it's hot, but all things that glow aren't necessarily hot.
That's true, and that's the problem we got. Okay, we're going to break and be back, and then Dr. Wood, you can make a closing comment for 3 or 4 minutes. Well, we're back from break talking about 911. We have Dr. Wood today, and she's brought some amazing information, evidence about the speed of the building falling. It's an impossibility. The 80% or better of the building is missing. Cars that are in the surrounding areas that shouldn't have anything to do with this, that are upside down or flipped or toasted. And then a hurricane that nobody wants to talk about in the weather. So based on all that, you have the floor for closing for whatever you would choose to address.
Well, there's a lot of different evidence. And what keeps you from seeing it is preconceived ideas. As I said, that when things happen, people have questions. As soon as they're given an answer, they quit asking questions. They assume that their answer is correct because they learned it from some guru or somebody wearing a uniform, a police officer or whatever. And they needed an answer. But then also, it was such a horrible event that happened that day. Who wants to go back and think through things again? That's like reliving it. So it tends to stay, however it was written. But I think it's so important that we all think our own thoughts. Don't let anyone else give you your opinion. Don't take my word for it. I present all this evidence on my website because I want everybody to be empowered to be able to see the evidence themselves and think carefully about what they're seeing. Yeah, don't try hard not to get distracted with other issues, because we first have to answer the question about what happened before we can address how it happened or who done it, much less why it happened. It's important to go in that order and just try to hold out every biased thought you might have. And that's why I use these weird words like, generic terms like fuzzballs, fuzzy blobs, fuming. I don't say smoke because that implies fire. It implies a particular cause. If you say generic term fuming, you don't know if it's chemical, if it's fire, or what it is. And it's a placeholder for a phenomenon that needs addressing. So there's a whole host of these. And if you go to my website, drjudywood.com, and go to the Cliff Notes page, there's a list of evidence that needs to be explained.
Well, I really want to thank you for being on. I'm really honored to have you on the show. Maybe you'll agree to come back on again, because this is an important issue. And the thing that, because I do law type things, is I wanted to see evidence. And when I started seeing this evidence that does not fit into these BS stories that they're putting out there, I said, I want to see the evidence. And there's no way to account for this. It's not accountable except in something along the Tesla technology or something. So.
I would like to ask, if I could add one more thing. I happened to run into a former student of mine in a local store last night, and I have to thank him for this wonderful example he gave about what was going on. He's studying acoustics of audio systems and about interference, and I think we're all familiar with how speaker systems affect things differently and where you get quiet spots, loud spots, sound cancellation, that's interference of another kind of waves. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
Well, I'd like to have you on again. We'll have to get Ted Kahn. I really appreciate it. I'm honored to have you on, and I appreciate your time. And I hope we've awakened some people. And I encourage you to go to Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com, and check it out for yourself. And let's engage the brain synopsis and forget the cover stories. And again, I thank you again.
Thank you.
Yep. Well, as I say in closing, this would enlighten the thing. Watch out for the federales. They're everywhere. And I hope you enjoyed the show. And I encourage you to go to Dr. Judy Wood's homepage, because it's a wealth of information. And we will see you next week.